For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
January 16th, we're in Treyasar and Hoshea, starting Perek Yud Beis, chapter 12. Sivuni bechachash Ephraim. Ephraim surrounds me with deceit. Of Mirma Beis Yisrael, and again in deceit, the house of Israel. V'Yehuda od rod im kel. And Yehuda is still in the, leading or showing his fear of Hashem. V'im kedoshim ne'aman, and with the sanctified ones, he is trustworthy. So again, contrasting Yehuda and Ephraim, and the northern kingdom and southern kingdom, is showing that that the northern kingdom, Ephraim, is with deceit, whereas Yehuda is showing his fear of Hashem. Ephraim ro eruach verodev kadim. Ephraim is shepherding ruach, which literally means spirit or whatever it is. It means that he's worshiping avodah zarah, and he's chasing after kadim, after the wind. Kol hayom kazav vashod yarbe, all day deceit and oppression he increases. Uvris im Ashur yichrosu, and makes a covenant with Ashur, with Assyria. Veshem al Mitzrayim yuvol, and sends oil to Egypt in order to make sure that Egypt will have a kind of covenant with them to save them in case they are attacked. V'riv laHashem im Yehuda. And Hashem shares his argument with Yehuda, which means, as Rashi explains, it's not that he's fighting with Yehuda, but he's going to lay out, Hashem lays out his argument with Ephraim in front of Yehuda, so that Yehuda will not be shocked when Ephraim is punished. Yehuda should understand why it's happening. V'lifkod al Yaakov kidrachav, and to visit on Yaakov according to his ways. Kema'alalav yashivlo, according to his actions, he will repay him, so that he's going to be punished for whatever it is that he has done. So Hashem now is going to explain why what Ephraim is doing is so bad, because of all the good that Hashem had done in the past for Ephraim. Babetin akaves achiv. First of all, already in the womb, Yaakov took hold of the heel of his brother. That was orchestrated by Hashem in order that it be symbolic that eventually Yaakov would come out as the leader. Uva ono sarah es Elokim, and in his strength he was able to take control of, to have power over Elokim. Elokim here means over the Malach. As we know that Yaakov's name was changed to Yisrael, ki sarisa im Elokim anashim, because you were able to control, you were able to fight over and to take control of the Malach that he fought with, and with people as well. So Hashem has done all this good for Yaakov. First he had him hold the heel of Esav, then later he had him defeat, gave him the power to defeat the angel of Esav. Vayasar el Malach, he was able to rule over the Malach. Vayuchol, he was able to do it. He was able to become a sar, to become a ruler over the Malach. Bacha vayeschan lo, the Malach cried and supplicated to Yaakov, begged Yaakov. Beis el yimtsa'enu, he will find us in Beis El. V'sham yedaber imanu, and there he will speak to us. The Malach said to Yaakov that Hashem will find us in Beis El, and he will speak to us in Beis El. The Yaakov told the Malach, I'm not going to let you go until you give me a bracha. And the Malach tried to push Yaakov off and say that when we get to Beis El, you and I will come to Beis El. This was when Yaakov was going back from Lavan back to Yitzchak. And on his way, he met this malach and fought with him. And then he wouldn't let the malach go. And the malach told him that in the future, down as you are heading home, as you're on the road, you will end up in Beis Yisrael, and I will be there as well. And Hashem will speak to us there. And Yaakov still demanded that the malach give him a bracha before he left. We'll talk about that story a little bit more in depth in a moment. Vashem Elokeat Svakos Hashem Zichro. And Hashem, the God of legions, Hashem is the way he is known. Rashi explains Hashem does not change. Hashem is a constant. And the way he was then, that's the way he is now, which is that if you follow in his ways, then everything is great. Hashem takes care of the person and the people, and otherwise, chas v'shalom, not. And you, in your Hashem, you should return. You should go back to Hashem. Chesed u'mishpat shemar. Chesed, kindness, and mishpat, and justice you should guard. V'kaveh elokecha tamid, and hope to your God all the time. That's the way to ensure that you are taken care of. Don't make these covenants with Ashur, with Mitzrayim. Make sure that you do tshuva and return to Hashem, and then you'll be taken care of. However, Kenan biyado mozne mirma la shokahev. Kenan, in his hand are the scales of deceit, like false scales, in order to pressure, take money away from those, in order to love taking away money from other people. He loves oshek. Oshek means to take money from people. Now, Kenan, of course, can mean the people of Kenan, but Kenan also means a merchant. The word Kenan can mean a merchant. It's used that way several times in Tanakh. And here, the simple meaning is that the people of Ephraim, in their business dealings as merchants, were using deceitful scales and stealing money from people, cheating people out of their money. Vayomer Ephraim said, Acha sharti, I was wealthy. Matsasi only, I found strength for me. I found reason to justify my behavior. The Medrash tells us that what reason did Ephraim find to justify his behavior? Because after the brothers finally come down to Mitzrayim and Yosef tells them, Ani Yosef, then after Yaakov dies, after 17 years in Mitzrayim, then the brothers see that Yosef no longer has them at his table, and they're afraid that Yosef is now going to punish them for all they did wrong to him. And then they come and they throw themselves before Yosef, and they say, Hinenu l'chala avadim. We are in front of you as slaves. So Ephraim says, I have rightful ownership of the Jewish people. They threw themselves before my ancestor Yosef as slaves. And therefore, whatever they own, I own. I can take their money. It belongs to me because they're my slaves. Kol yegiyai, all of my effort, lo yimtsu'uli. Now this is the Navi saying back to Ephraim that he should have said, all of my effort or all of my sins, lo yimtsu'uli avona sherchet, all my effort will not do me any good because of all the sins that I've done. All the effort I've put in to get this wealth is not going to do me any good because of my sins. That he may have found a justification, but that justification is not really enough to absolve him from all the sins that he has done. Why? V'anochi Hashem Elokecha me'eretz Mitzrayim. I am Hashem, your God, from the Mitzrayim. That I took care of you in Mitzrayim. You didn't become Yosef. Your ancestor Yosef did not become the viceroy over Egypt all by himself. I made him that way. I'm the one who gave him the power to do that. And therefore, you shouldn't take that as license to be able to take people's money. Somehow you think you have it coming to you. You don't have it coming to you. The way that happened was through my orchestration. Moreover, the language here is Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God, which of course is the same language as the beginning of the Aseres HaDibros, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God. And as the Medrash says, you remember the statement that your brothers made to Yosef, to your ancestor, that Hinenu l'chala avadim, we are before you as slaves, but you don't remember your promise to me to be slaves in the in the Aseres Hadiros in Matan Torah, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. You're having selective memory in remembering only that which gives you an excuse to plunder, but not that which makes you have to listen to me. But then Hashem says, Od oshivcha va'ahalim, I will yet sit you in tents, ki me moed, like the days of our meeting. Intense here means, like Yaakov Avinu Yoshev Ohalim, that learning in the yeshivos, that Hashem says, there will still come a time when you, Ephraim, will, as in the past, you will still be learning, like it says with Yaakov, Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim, you too will end up in the tents of learning, doing the right thing. V'dibarti al ha-Nevi'im, I spoke by the hands of the Nevi'im, v'anochi chazon hirbesi, and I increased their vision, their ability to see, in order that they should speak to you and tell you what I'm saying. U'v'yad ha-Nevi'im adameh, and in the hands of the Nevi'im I will appear, I guess is the best way to translate it. It means that Hashem gives the Nevi'im various visions that allow them to understand things about Hashem. Adameh is a reference to the limited vision of the Nevi'im, in that they're not seeing, as we've spoken about before, Bas Baklaria Hami'ira, they're not seeing through a clear glass like Moshe Rabbeinu, they're seeing only visions and things that are to imply or to symbolize the word of Hashem, but they're not seeing it clearly. That's the reference of Adameh. We're going to talk a little more about that. Hopefully, we'll do that this evening as well. Just want to read one more pasuk. Im Gilad Oven Achshav Hayu. If in Gilad there is, Gilad was the other side of the Yarden. It was one of the 10 tribes, part of one of the 10 tribes. If there is Oven here means if they're broken. It's because of their own doing the wrong thing. Shav hayu, they did the wrong thing. Ba Gilgal shivarim zibechu, in Gilgal they slaughtered oxen as avodah zarah. Gam is bechosam kegalim, also their altars are like the waves or the furrows, they're all over the place. We mentioned this in the last parak as well. Al talmei sadai, on the furrows of the field, you find their altars all around. So the Navi is going back and forth between giving Musar, admonishing the Aseres HaShvatim, and at the same time also encouraging and saying things will be better, you can do tshuva, and you will yet sit in tents, etc. Now, as part of this discussion, Hashem said in the beginning that I'm going to show you why it's so bad what Ephraim is doing, because look how much I did for the Jewish people, and yet they're behaving this way. The next pasuk, which we're not going to read right now, is, I know it's the end of the perek, but the next pasuk is going to go back to that theme where Hashem lists what he did for Yaakov and how he helped Klal Yisrael come out of Mitzrayim. Although the parak does not end here, that next pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, is the beginning of the Haftorah for Parashas Vayetze, and we have a lot to cover right now in these first 12 psukim. So most likely we're going to stop here this evening and continue from Yud Gimel next week. That's most likely what's going to happen, depending on how long it takes us to cover what we have to cover in these 12 psukim we just said. Yes, you have a question?
Yeah. So you're saying that when Moshe speaks for Hashem, and when Moshe sees what Hashem wants to lay out, it's transparent, right? Moshe was extremely humble, and he would give over the message of Hashem, and because of that, he also was zochah to be like the closest to Hashem of anybody ever, right? But usually, with a Navi, the vision of Hashem, or the vision that Hashem lays out for them, also goes through the Navi's personality.
Yes. Yeah, the Ramchal writes that both the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah, this idea of a clear glass and a cloudy glass is a mashal. Just to help us understand it, the Ramchal writes that both Moshe Rabbeinu and all of the Navim, when they say their nevuah, they are saying exactly what Hashem tells them to say. They're not choosing the words. Hashem is choosing the words, and they are saying the exact words that Hashem tells them to say. However, the words that Moshe Rabbeinu says, which are Torah, would be the same no matter which Navi Hashem would have chosen to give the Torah through. It would have been the exact same words. Bereishis bara Elokim is purely Bereishis bara Elokim, irrespective of whether it's Moshe Rabbeinu saying it, or like the Gemara says, if it wouldn't have been Moshe Rabbeinu, it would have been Ezra HaSofer. That wouldn't make a difference. Whereas the nevuah of the other Nevi'im, Hashem injects into the nevuah their personality, as you put it, or their level of piety. It's all injected into the words, so that the personality and the greatness, perhaps even the faults of the Nevi'im, are part of the nevuah itself. So that it's not pure in that sense. That's the way the Ramchal explains the difference between the two. Okay, but that's really not relevant to specifically tonight, but that's the idea. Okay. Now, going back to the beginning of the Perek, if we do get to that word Adamed, then it will be relevant. So perhaps we'll see. We'll see what we'll get to tonight. Okay. So this parak is actually quite relevant to this week's parsha. We're up to Parshas Beshalach in a few days. And the Medrash tells us that when in the first pasuk over here in the parak, when it says that Ephraim was deceitful and Yehuda demonstrated his fear of Hashem, the Medrash says that this is a reference to the famous story that when we got to the Yam Suf and we had our backs to the sea and the Egyptians were on the other side, and Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, tell the Jews and they should just travel into the sea. The Jews were afraid to do so. And we know that Nachshon ben Aminadav from the tribe of Yehuda jumped in and waded out into the ocean until the water was up to his nose, which means he would have drowned had he gone any further. And that's when the sea split. That's when Kriyas Yam Suf happened. Because Yehuda demonstrated his fear of Hashem, his devotion to Hashem, whereas Ephraim, meaning the other Shvatim, did not. The Gemara actually says that it wasn't just Nachshon ben Aminadav, it was also the Shevet of Binyamin. It was Yehuda and Binyamin were the two Shvatim that were actually trying to be the ones to demonstrate their devotion to Hashem and go out into the water first, so that to show that they trusted that Hashem would make the sea split no matter what. So that's referred to in the first pasuk here. In the second pasuk, when it says that Ephraim was worshipping Avodah Zarah, and they made their covenants with Ashur and with Mitzrayim. So, what does it mean they made a covenant with Ashur and Mitzrayim? So they were afraid of foreign nations, particularly they were afraid of Nebuchadnezzar, they were afraid of Sancheriv, and they made various covenants and treaties. So one of the ones they made a treaty with was with Mitzrayim. The Medrash says that when they sent for help, when the Jews were in trouble and they sent for help, Rashi brings this in Eicha actually, they sent for help, so the Mitzrim got into boats to travel over the Mediterranean, to travel maybe over the Yam Suf. Whatever it is, they got into boats to travel to Eretz Yisrael to help the Jewish people. As they were on the boats, Hashem made it that there were objects bobbing in the water. And the Egyptians looked at the objects and said, what are those objects? And they said, you know what those must be? Those must be the corpses of our ancestors that were drowned in the Yam Suf. And here we're going to save the Jewish people who caused this terrible thing to happen to our ancestors. So they turned around and went back home. And they never came to help the Jewish people. Which means as follows, that that Ephraim, or the Jewish people as a whole, other than Yehuda, were not willing to jump into the Yam Suf as to show their devotion to Hashem. Later on, that same incredible miracle that helped us ended up hurting Ephraim, the rest of the Jewish people, when they, instead of showing devotion to Hashem, looked for other means to protect themselves, looked towards the Egyptians for protection. So Hashem used the same act of Kriyas Yamsuf to turn them away. Because Kriyas Yamsuf, at the end of the day, was meant to be something which would bring us Jews closer to Hashem, and that we should be devoted to Hashem. When the Aseres HaShvatim did not show that devotion, so then the very act of Kriyas Yamsuf turns out to be the thing that undermines their attempt to find salvation and hope with a different nation, without turning to Hashem. They don't want to turn to Hashem, so that incredible encounter we had with Hashem serves to undermine their attempt to get away from Hashem. On a larger scale, what this always means is that Hashem is interested in being connected to us and wants us to be connected to Him. As we try to move away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chas V'Shalom, so then He takes steps to keep us where we are and not to move away from Him. The Kriyas Yamsuf was meant to be something which would keep us close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it was done in such a positive and beautiful way. He saves our lives, and He destroys our enemies, and we sing Shira. There can't be a more loving way than Hashem shows us His closeness to us and how He draws us close to Him. But that very same act of love that shows how close we are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and its whole purpose is to bring us close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if the Jews try to stray from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that same act will serve to bring us closer, but without a demonstration of love. The Kriyas Yamsuf turned the Egyptians away from helping the Jewish people, which meant the Jewish people would then be dragged into Golus. Why were they being dragged into Golus? Because they were not being close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Golus would serve to act as a kapara, as an atonement for the Jewish people, to bring us back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Kriyas Yamsuf, one way or another, is going to bring the Jews closer. On the simple level, it brings the Jews closer in a loving way. But if we don't take that message, then it brings us closer in a non-loving way. And that is true about everything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not need to have two different systems or plans. The same act that He does can work in all ways. In Az Yashar, it says Hashem Ish Milchama. It says Hashem Ish Milchama Hashem Shmo. It's referenced over there. It's referenced in Yemin Hashem Nedari Vakoach Yemin Hashem Tiratz Oyev. If you look in Kriyas Yamsuf over and over again, you see that the same Yemin, the same right of Hashem, whatever that means, that destroys the enemy, is the same Yemin that is the one that shows, gives us strength. The same Hashem, Hashem's name, that is the name of mercy that takes care of us, is also that same name of Hashem that is the Ish Milchama that wages war. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately wants us to be close to Him. And He will make sure that happens, and that will happen either through acts that we like or acts that we don't like. For example, anti-Semitism, we know the purpose of anti-Semitism is to bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the reason for it. The reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu has that in the world is as a method of keeping us close to Him. Now that works two ways. In the negative way, which is the way we're used to it, it works that when we chas v'shalom stray from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so, and we try to be like the non-Jews, so Hashem turns the non-Jews against us. And the non-Jews reject us, which leaves us no place to turn but back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a very negative thing, and it's painful, and it's a very, very sad way that it happens, but it is effective. It does turn us back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That same anti-Semitism also can be an act of love, in that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings the enemies against us who serve, who want to destroy us, and then Hashem destroys them openly, showing His love for us, showing that you can't touch the Jewish people because Hashem loves us. The same anti-Semitism works either to bring us close through pain, chas v'shalom, or through love. It can go either way, and that is always the case. We have in Tanakh many times when the Klal Yisrael were attacked, and the attack could have been terrible, but in the end we did tshuva, and therefore the attack turned out to be a beautiful act of love. The Purim story reflects that, where it could have been terrible, there could have been tremendous casualties, a huge, terrible, terrible blow against the Jewish people. Why? Because we were straying away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that would have served to turn us back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Baruch Hashem, there we did tshuva prior to the calamity, and instead it turns into a beautiful act of love, and Hashem showing us how much He loves us, that the non-Jews can't do anything to us. And it turns into a yontif of Purim. And that is always the case. Kriyas Yam Suf, which openly seems to be a beautiful act of love, it can also be the same catalyst for pain if the purpose is to bring the Jews to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's always the case in the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. In that Pasuk, which I'm going to only mention briefly right now, in that Pasuk of... In Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, where he says, "Uvian ha-Nevi'im adameh," that in the hands of the Nevi'im, I am, what was the word we used? I am symbolized, or I am pictured. Here, the Medrash draws a distinction not only between the Nevu'ah of Moshe Rabbeinu and the other Nevi'im, which we just mentioned before, but also between the revelation that the Jews had at Yam Suf. Same thing as we started the parak with, at Yam Suf, where the Jews were able to say, "Zeh keli va'anveyu," this is my God, and I will glorify Him. They're able to point with their finger, because they see an open miracle, one that is so obviously, it's so obvious that it announces and projects the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they're able to say Zeh keli va'anveyu, and the Medrash says Rasa shivcha layam, even a lowly maid saw at the Yam Suf mashalo ro neviim, when even the neviim did not see. The neviim are only adameh, even Yechezkel, even Yeshayahu, where they see the Merkava, they see the chariot of Hashem, and they see the incredible things. Nevertheless, it's only adameh. It's only visions that are symbolic of Hashem. Whereas on the Yam Suf, the Klal Yisrael, even the lowliest of Klal Yisrael, saw, Kivyachol actually saw Hashem. They didn't see Hashem, but they saw a more clear picture of HaKadosh Baruch Hu than all the Nevi'im saw. That is referenced in Adameh. In this discussion of where Hashem says that He wants to show why is it that Ephraim really should be behaving better, how much Hashem has done for us. So, in Pasuk Dalet, he references that Hashem had Yaakov holding on to the heel of Esav, and then He gave Yaakov the power to rule over the Malach, to rule over the Malach of Esav. And then in Pasuk Hay it says that He ruled over the Malach, and He was able to, and the Malach cried and begged to Yaakov, and He said, "Beis El, He will find us, and there He will speak to us." What is this talking about? Rashi, in Chumash, in Parashas Vayishlach, at that story of Yaakov and the Malach, brings this pasuk of Hosea. This pasuk of Ayasar Alamach, pasuk Hey, verse 5, is brought by Rashi. I want to read to you how Rashi presents it, and then I want to give you a little bit of insight into that story in Parshas Vayishlach. In Parshas Vayishlach, it's a well-known story. We know that Yaakov was crossing into Eretz Yisrael. He crossed the Yabok, the river, and that he forgot Pachim Ketanim, he left behind small vessels. And he went back for the small vessels. He was by himself. Vayivaser Yaakov levado. Yaakov was all alone. Vayeovek ish imo ad alos hashachar. And a man fought with him until alos hashachar. Alos hashachar is the beginning of the morning. It's before sunrise. It's just as there's a little bit of light in the sky. That's where the morning just begins. So he fought with him until morning. Chazal tell us this man that Yaakov fought with was the Malach of Esav. Yaakov was going to meet Esav, and he was afraid of Esav. And here he meets the Saro Shel Esav, the angel of Esav, the one that every nation has a malach that represents them. And here Yaakov has a pitched battle with the malach of Esav. And we know that the pasuk tells us, I just want to mention one thing here. This is the way the Medrash says it is. It's Saro Shel Esav. I want to emphasize that word Sar. Sar means leader, and that's the word being used over here with Yaakov. Yisrael comes from the word Sar, because you ruled over. That's what it means. So they were on the Malach and Yaakov have this big battle in the middle of the night, all the way till morning. The pasuk says, "Vayar ki lo yachol lo." The angel saw he was unable to defeat Yaakov. Vayiga b'chaf yerecho, so he touched his hip. Vateka kaf yerech Yaakov be'av ko'imo, and Yaakov's hip is displaced in his fighting with this angel. But nevertheless, Yaakov wins the battle, even though Yaakov gets hurt, and that is symbolic that Yaakov does get hurt. Nevertheless, the angel loses the battle with Yaakov. Vayomer Shalcheni, the angel says, "Send me, ki ala shachar, for it is morning. I need to leave. Send me away." Vayomer Yaakov says, "Lo ashalechach, I will not send you, ki imberachtani, unless you give me a bracha." What bracha is Yaakov asking for? Rashi tells us, "Hodel li ala brachos sheberchani avi." Admit to me about the brachos that my father gave me. She'esav ma'arar aleihem, the Esav is complaining over them. Esav wants to kill me because of the brachos that I took. You're his sar. I want you to officially admit that they belong to me. Otherwise, I'm not letting you go. Vayomer elav ma'ashemecha. So the angel says to Yaakov, "What's your name?" Vayomer Yaakov. He says, "My name is Yaakov." Vayomer, the angel says, "Lo Yaakov ye'amer od shimcha, your name will no longer be called Yaakov, ki im Yisrael, rather Yisrael." Why Yisrael? "Ki sarisa im Elokim v'im anashim, for you fought, you ruled over Elokim," really means angels, meaning me, "and with men," and that's a reference to Esav and Lavan, "v'atuchol, and you were able to, you managed to defeat them." The pasuk said about the angel, "Ki lo yachol lo." He was unable to defeat Yaakov, but you, Yaakov, you were able to defeat me and also Lavan and Esav. Vayishal Yaakov. Yaakov asked him, the angel, Vayomer, and he said, "Hagidan Hashemecha, tell me your name." "I told you my name. You tell me your name." Vayomer, the angel said, "Lamazet Yishal Lishmi, why are you asking me my name?" Vayavarech Oso Sham, and he gave him a bracha there. It's very cryptic. What is this conversation between Yaakov and the angel? What is the back and forth, the give and take between the two? Rashi tells us the following. Now, I'm going to read you the Rashi. It fills in a lot of the story, but it still needs more explanation. When the angel says, "Your name will no longer be Yaakov," Lo ye'amer od, it will no longer be said, Shabrachos ba'u lecha be'akeva uremia, that the brachos came to you through trickery and through some sort of cleverness. No one's going to say that anymore. Ki im bisrara v'gilui panim, rather than through srara, through ruling, through rulership, and through gilui panim, through Hashem's countenance, that He wants you to have the brachos. People will say, "You, Yaakov, you deserve the brachos. You won't be called Yaakov anymore. You will call Yisrael." So remember, Yaakov says, "I'm not letting you go until you give me a bracha." which means until you admit the brachos are mine. So the angel says, don't worry, you say your name is Yaakov, it's not so, you will no longer be known as Yaakov, which implies that you got the brachos through akevus, through sort of cleverness, and through trickery. That's not what anybody's going to say anymore. It's going to be through srara, through rulership, through Hashem's countenance. V'sofchan, in the end, Shakadosh Baruch Hu nigla alecha beveisel, Hashem will appear to you in beisel. U'machlev shimcha, and He will change your name. Hashem will change your name in Beis El. V'sham hu mevarchecha, and there He will give you the bracha. Later on, and this does happen later on after Yaakov meets Esav, and after the whole episode with Dina, all the way later on, he's all the way coming back to Yaakov, to Yitzchak, excuse me, and on his way, Hashem tells him, go to Beis El, because that's where Yaakov had originally had his dream with the ladder. And when you get to Beis El, then you will bring karbanos to me like you promised. And in Beis El, Hashem says to Yaakov, your name is no longer Yaakov, it will be Israel. So the angel here is telling him a premonition. This is what is going to happen. Not yet, but it will happen when you get to Beis El. And the angel says, Vani Sham Eyeh, I will be there in Beis El, V'odelecha alein, and I will admit to you about the brachos there. You won't let me go until I admit to you the brachos are yours. I'm telling you, I'm filling you in, that in the future, not long, just a little bit longer, you'll get to Beis El, you'll complete the whole circle, because you left from Beis El, you're going to come back to Beis El, you'll fulfill your promise to Hashem, and there, I will be there and admit that the brachos are yours. V'zesh ha-kasuf, that's what it means in Hosea, which we just read. V'yasar el malach, he ruled over the malach, vayuchal, he was able to. Bacha vayischan en lo, he cried, the angel cried and pleaded with Yaakov. Bacha hamalach vayischan en lo, the malach cried and pleaded. Uma nischan en lo, what did the angel say to plead with Yaakov? Beis el yimtzaenu, v'sham yadaber imanu, Hashem will find us, you and me, there in Beis El, and that's where He'll speak to us. And that's where your name will be changed to Yisrael, and I'll be there and I'll admit it. Hamtein liyad sheyedaber imanu sham. Wait for me until Hashem speaks to you, He speaks to us there. That's where I'll admit the brachos. Don't make me admit it now, says the Malach. He pleads with Yaakov. He cries to Yaakov. Don't make me admit it now. I don't want to admit it now. I'll admit it there in Beis El. Let's not do it yet. V'lo ratza Yaakov. Yaakov didn't want that. V'al karcho hodolo alehen, and he forced the angel to admit it then, right away, not in Beis El, but right over here at this battle. V'zehu, that's what it means. V'yavarach oso sham, he made him give him the bracha there. Shayem eschanan lahamtim lo, that the angel was pleading to wait. V'lo ratza, Yaakov didn't want to. So what this pasuk in Hosea is talking about is Vayasar el Malach Vayuchal, he ruled over the Malach and he was able to. Bacha Vayischan en lo, the angel cried out and pleaded to Yaakov. He said, I don't want to admit to the brachos now. Beis El yimtzaenu, Hashem will find us, you and me in Beis El. V'sham yadaber imanu, there He will speak to us. Let me wait until then. But Yaakov said, nothing doing. I'm not letting you go till you admit the brachos now. And the angel admits the brachos. And then Yaakov lets him go.
We know that every angel is given a job by Hashem, and that's all he can do, right? He's not supposed to deviate. So what was this angel's specific job?
Good. That's what we have to talk about. Perfect. Okay. So the Medrash says that when the angel said to Yaakov, Shalcheini ki Allah ha-shachar, send me, because let me go, because the shachar has come up. So the Medrash says, Rashi brings it in Vayishlach, because it's time to say Shira. I need to go say Shira, and if you don't let me go, I'm going to miss the time to say Shira. I got to say Shira. There are Midrashim that elaborate, the Yaakov said to him, okay, so you'll miss it today, you'll do it tomorrow. So the angel said to him, no, if I miss today, they won't let me do it tomorrow. That's it. You know, I only get one, you know, if I don't do it, then once you miss, you miss. Can't be late. So, but Targum Yonason says over here a fascinating thing, that the Malach says to Yaakov, let me go, because it's time to sing Shira, and from the day the world was created until today, it was not my turn to say Shira. And now it is my turn to say Shira. Now, this morning, is finally my turn has come to say Shira. You got to let me go. And Yaakov said, I won't let you go till you emit the brachos. The angel said, he pleads with him, let's do it in Beis El. I'm telling you, it's going to happen in Beis El. And Yaakov said, no, nothing doing. You're going to let me know now, or you're going to miss your one opportunity to say Shira. And the angel is forced to admit it. So what is that? What is that give and take? So, as Mrs. Lewis said, angels have jobs. They have specific jobs. They have to do those jobs. What is Shira? Well, we have Oz Yashar in this week's parsha. Shira is when something, whether it is people, whether it is an angel, whether it is the physical world, when something is functioning perfectly in its service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is Shira. Shira is the perfection of service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that either that triggers Shira or that is Shira. For example, in Yehoshua, when he stops the sun, he has to sing a Shira. The Medrash says, why did he have to sing a Shira? Because this sun is constantly singing a Shira because it's doing exactly the job Hashem gave it to do. But when Yeshua stopped it, it was not doing its job at that time. So there needed to be a Shira to replace the Shira of the sun. And Yeshua therefore sang a Shira to replace the Shira of the sun of that time. Because Shira is perfection in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which by the way means that Yeshua was at that moment perfectly serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why he was able to say a Shira. And that's why he was able to stop the sun. The sun wasn't needed because it was replaced by by Klal Yisrael that were serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu to perfection. The angel of Esav has a job. And the angel of Esav's job is the job of Esav. Remember, Esav all along was meant to play a supporting role to Yaakov. Esav, Verav, Yavod, Sa'ir, the older one will serve the younger one. Yaakov is the main show, but Esav is meant to be the one who provides the context in which Yaakov serves HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There were two brachos that were given out in Parshas Toldos. The famous one, the one they fought over, was V'yiten Lacha. That was for control over Olam Hazeh, over this world. But there was another bracha, and that was a bracha for Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak gave that to Yaakov without any debate. There was no fighting over that. That was clear and obvious. Yitzchak knew all along he was going to give that to Yaakov, because Yaakov was the Ish Tam Yoshevo Halim. He's the one who was the one who learned. He was the spiritual one. He belongs in Eretz Yisrael. That was uncontested. And Yitzchak knew that all along. The contested bracha was the bracha of Yitzchak Lacha. We don't have time now to go into what Yitzchak was thinking, what Rivka was thinking. We've talked about that in our Sunday night shiur extensively. But that was the bracha that Esav wanted, which was control over this world, and that was the bracha that Rivka knew could not go to Esav, because Esav had forfeited his right to play that supporting role for Yaakov. Originally, Yaakov was to marry Rachel, Esav was to marry Leah. And they would form a kind of like a Yisachar Zevulun partnership, in which Yaakov would be the one who would be the main one serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu al taras HaKadosh with purity and spirituality, and Esav would be the one providing that context, both in terms of dealing with the rest of the world and dealing with providing food and things of that nature. In the end, Esav forfeited his right to do that because he didn't behave. And therefore, Yaakov has now both roles. He has the Yaakov role, which is reflected in marrying Rachel, and he also has the Esav role, which is reflected in marrying Leah. He has both roles. And that's why both brachos, the bracha of Eretz Yisrael and the bracha of Yitin Lecha, has to go to Yaakov. And he has both. Then what is Esav's role? If he lost the ability to be the supporting role to Yaakov, what is his role? And the answer is, his role is to be the supporting role to Yaakov. That's his role. But not in the way that it would have been nice to do it. Just as we spoke about before, how you can have the same exact action that can reflect itself in different ways. Esav's job is to support Yaakov, to make sure that Yaakov is able to do his job. But he lost the right to be able to have that position in a lofty way, in a way that is chashuv, that is important. Instead, he plays that role, but in a very diminished way. And now, Esav's role is primarily to be that anti-Semitism that is triggered when we need, chas v'shalom, a reminder of what our job is. That is Esav still playing the role of Esav, but not in an elevated, wonderful, beautiful way, instead in a lowly way. That's Esav's job. And by extension, Esav's sar, his malach, is doing the same job. That's the job of Esav. This malach comes to fight with Yaakov, and Yaakov defeats the malach. The Chazal tell us that this malach represents golus. It represents the long golus Edom, in which we are trying to pull ourselves out of this, to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to achieve kapara, to achieve atonement, in order to finally be able to fulfill our purpose in life. And the galus, which is perpetrated by Esav, is meant to bring that about as well. This malach, therefore, represents that job. And he fights with Yaakov, trying to defeat Yaakov. And he's unable to defeat Yaakov. Ultimately, all he can do is wound Yaakov, which is very significant, but not for tonight. And that, therefore, leaves Yaakov with this angel. And now, the angel has done his job. The malach of Esav has symbolically done everything Esav is going to do, which is he's going to fight with Klal Yisrael throughout Golus to force Klal Yisrael to recognize our mission, our job. And in the end, he is unsuccessful in completely defeating us. Rather, the malach is successful in being that negative force that pushes Klal Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now he can say Shira, because he has fulfilled his job. He did what he's supposed to do. Therefore, he can now say Shira, because Shira is the perfection of the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The malach has done his job. He needs to go. And Yaakov says, I'm not letting you go. You're not letting him go. His job, he did what Hashem told him to do. What are you can go, you're overriding HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem said that it's time for him to go say Shira. He said, I'm not letting you go. I'm not letting you go. I have you. I'm not letting you go. The angel says, I got to go. I got to say Shira. Yaakov says, that's fine, but you've got to admit the brachos are mine. There's one step left. You haven't yet admitted the brachos are mine. What does that mean? You haven't yet admitted the brachos are mine. That means you still want to play that role of the, even though you lost this battle, you want to leave the door open for another battle. You want to still have the ability to force me and attack me and be able to say that the brachos don't really belong to me. You haven't admitted that your role is the diminished role, that you no longer have a right to the expanded role that Hashem originally set for you. Even at the end, even after Leah has all those children with Yaakov, Rachel doesn't have children with Yaakov. The Medrash tells us, Rashi brings in a Chumash, Esav was hoping that Yaakov would divorce Rachel because she didn't have any children from him, and then Esav would marry her. What does that mean? What that means is Esav was still hoping to play an expanded role. If he can't play the Leah role, let him play the Rachel role, which is unbelievable that he should think he could do that. But Esav still has, he still wants that elevated role, even after it's all over. And now there, Yaakov is ready to be buried. Esav comes and he says, I don't want you to bury Yaakov there. He got one portion in the Maros HaMachpelah, he got Leah's, and he buried Leah there. The other portion is mine. I'll be buried with Leah. I'm still connected. I still have some claim to this elevated status. And of course, we know that's not true. And Yaakov is buried there except for Esav's head. He's also buried there, which means there is something. So Esav is demanding that status. Yaakov is saying to the angel, admit now, you have no claim. Admit it now. The angel says, I'll let you in on a secret that I am going to admit it. You win. I'm going to admit it. We're going to come to Beis El. And just a little bit further down the road, we're going to come to Beis El. And when we get to Beis El, then I will admit it. And your name is going to be changed from Yaakov to Yisrael. And that will be clear that it's yours. You play both the role of Rachel and the role of Leah, and that Esav does not play an elevated role at all. He loses his status completely, and now he's relegated to only the negative role. That's what's going to happen when we get to Beisel. So let me go. I filled you in on the secret. Now you know. The Medrash says that the Malach was giving up a lot by telling something that was supposed to be a secret. But Yaakov forced him. So he had to do it. So he says, let me go. Now, the Rashi says that Yaakov said, no, I'm not letting you go. And he forced him to give him bracha there. But the Pasuk says more than that. The Pasuk says that after the angel let Yaakov in on that secret, Yaakov says to the angel, what is your name? You ask me my name, so you tell me your name. It sounds like Yaakov is saying, okay, I'll accept that. I can let you go based on this information you're telling me now that you will admit it down the line. That's good. But I need your name. Tell me your name. The angel says, what are you asking me my name for? And he gave him his bracha, and he admitted it there. So it seems like it hinged on this name. That had the Malach been willing to admit his name, he would not have had to admit the bracha. Then Yaakov would have accepted that it can wait. But when the angel says, you can't ask my name, there is, which Rashi says, we don't have a name. As Mrs. Lewis said, angels' names change because it depends on what job we're given. So I can't tell you my name. Then Yaakov says, okay, fine, then you need to admit it now. So what is this business with the name? So it seems to me that what's happening here is, Yaakov says to the Malach, I can accept that it will happen down the line. That's okay. But only if you tell me your name. Meaning, only if you tell me exactly what to expect from you. You're a malach. And you malachim, especially the Yetzer Hara, that which is trying to get us to do averos, you're very clever. And you can attack in this way, you can attack in that way, you can attack us looking like enemies, you can attack us looking like our friends. There are all kinds of ways that Hashem sends the non-Jews against us to get us to do averos, to act as the ones that are trying to be the struggle, the creating the struggles for us. It can happen all kinds of ways. I'm willing to wait, but you got to tell me your name. I'm only willing to wait if you tell me what will the struggle look like. The Malach says, can't do that, because it changes. I can't tell you what the struggle is going to look like. The struggle of Eastern Europe in the 1800s is not the struggle of the United States in the 20th century. And the struggle of the United States in the 20th century is not the struggle of Eretz Yisrael in the 21st century. It's a different struggle. And I can't tell you what it's going to be. It's different. It continuously changes. Yaakov says, if that's the case, then I need assurances now. We can't wait. You admit the brachos now, then I can let you go. Because if that struggle is going to be something which I can't pin down as being a specific thing, then I need you to admit now. We can't wait for base L for when you will admit it. Yes?
But I thought that angels did not have free will. Angels do not have free will. So how can he have agreed to something?
He doesn't have free will, but Yaakov has free will. That's what's happening over here. Yaakov is changing the instructions to the Malach. See, what's really happening over here is, as was said before, right? The Malach really can't think on his own. Meaning, he really could think on his own, but he's told what to do. He's a very, very sophisticated robot. What's happening is that Yaakov's decision making is affecting the Malach, and it's affecting it in real time. It's constantly it's being affected as the conversation is going on over there. So Yaakov is essentially, I don't want to use kiviyachol, forcing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand in making the Malach do these things. Now, this is a suggestion in what the back and forth was between Yaakov and the Malach, and it gives us more insight. It's not a complete picture, because what is the difference between admitting it now and admitting it later? What does that do? What does that mean? Apparently it's very, very significant whether it's admitted now or later. And in fact, the Malach does admit it now, and then again in Beis El, Hashem says, your name is no longer Yaakov, it's Yisrael, and the Malach is there as well. But evidently, there was some change that took place here. And it could be that that's why, and in the next episode, he goes and meets Esav. And as we've spoken about many years ago, there was no need anymore for the preparation Yaakov had originally done. Yaakov's original plan had been to split the camps. He was prepared for war. He prepared with presents. But then when he meets Esav, the camps are not split anymore. It seems that this battle with the Malach changed that. There was no need to split the camps. It could be because he got the angel to admit now, and therefore he's not in danger anymore. Not in that kind of danger anyway. So there's some kind of a change that happened over here. What exactly that is, that's a little bit more obscure also. It would take a much more time to go through. But this pasuk is the pasuk that alludes to this conversation between Yaakov and the angel.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.